So we planted Mosaic about 20 years ago, and really we have asked the question right from the start, how on earth do you keep the missional evangelistic temperature high in the church? Because in one sense, the community, which I can tell there's a sort of amongst the three churches, you can just tell as you walk in, there's a lovely sense of community. So that sort of journey inward with each other. The sense of worship and adoring God, you can tell being with you guys, you love to worship, you love to give your lives to Jesus. It's usually the out, the how do we engage with the world is the tough bit for most of us. There'll be a few evangelists that are super keen, but for the majority of us, it's pretty hard. I've heard evangelism described as this: someone who doesn't want to tell someone about something they probably don't want to know about. And the perception we have in evangelism is that it can feel like a little bit like a sales cold call or door knocking. And that sort of stuff often results in quite a lot of knockback, which sort of undermines our confidence. And my hope just in these few minutes we've got together is by the end of this session, you'll just sort of feel like your heart's growing a little bit in confidence and faith for the stuff that we all know we're called to do, all in various different ways. And from my personal experience in trying to mobilize people, here are the things that I see, and I thought I'd get them out in the open for you to own your stuff right from the start and for me to hopefully pulverize the lies that often go on in our hearts when it comes to excluding ourselves from evangelism and mission. So here's some of the things that we feel at Mosaic. So there's apathy, so there's just like a lack of desire and motivation. I know I should, but I can't be bothered. There's awkwardness. If you are British in the room, this will be you, I guarantee you. There's an awkwardness when it comes to speaking about our faith. And we hate to make conversations awkward. And so talking about Jesus immediately makes us feel like we're making it awkward. And so we don't want to kill our relationships, kill the moments. There's fear. I'm scared of being rejected. This is my top one. When I'm engaging in any sort of spiritual conversation, I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to spoil the friendship. I don't want them to think badly of me. There's comfort. I want to stay in the comfort zone. There's something called functional atheism, which is pretty hard to own. But it basically means we don't really live with this sort of spiritual awareness that Jesus desires all the nations to come to himself, that the Great Commission applies for ourselves. So we just sort of ignore that and we get on with our own lives. Or we feel under-equipped, like, what do I say? What do I do? And if someone is actually interested, what do I do? I don't know what to say. Or we're just out of practice. So perhaps you used to do this and you've just sort of got out of the habit. Why don't you turn to your neighbor and own one of these things? If you're feeling brave, you could own a few, because I could definitely do that. So why don't you just turn to the person next to you, say which, and you might have your own stuff, but what out of that list do you most sort of like lean into? So the question I want to ask you personally is, what is going to move the dial for you today? Like, what is going to convince you enough to move you to action? And so with the time I've got, I'm going to give you three reasons to be confident in evangelism. And then hopefully if I've got time, I'm going to give you three tools to equip you to be more missional. So that's where we're going. Three reasons to be confident, three tools. Everyone happy so far? You've got no choice, have you? You're in here now. So number one, the biblical perspective. Reason to be confident, number one, is God's not hiding. It's easy to believe that people are looking for God, but he can't be found. He's almost like a cosmic game of hide and seek. Humanity is looking, God is hiding, and it's so hard to find God that he probably doesn't exist, and he's probably not that interested in us. But that is not the picture the Bible paints. Romans 1, verses 18 to 20, heavy, heavy verses, says this: the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth. Say suppress the truth. by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, say eternal power, divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. God is not hiding. The passage is super, super clear. God's revealing himself in everything that he's made. People are without excuse because creation points gloriously to a creator. And in fact, the Apostle Paul, I think, is probably saying a couple more things. Number one, we are running away from God. People are actively suppressing the truth, verse 18. And the picture I want you to think of is like trying to hold a balloon underwater. Like humanity in our depravity are trying to suppress and push that balloon, pretend that there's no God. We are the ones that are trying to hide from God. But it takes energy. And as soon as you stop pushing that balloon, it's going to suddenly pop up to the top. And that's what we believe, that God is relentlessly, we've just been singing about it. God is relentlessly looking and searching for people, wanting the prodigals to come home. Amen? That's what we believe, that he's on the move. He's looking for people to stop actively suppressing the truth. And secondly, people can't escape their need for God. That's why verse 20 says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and his divine nature have been clearly seen. The idea here is that God is revealing himself, his eternal power, his divine nature. So at a deep level, humanity knows that they are created beings, dependent creatures, dependent on a power that's bigger than ourselves. And that's why we're without excuse, because I think everyone at some level knows they're accountable to someone greater than themselves. It's the hole in our hearts that we long for more. Across the world, there are billions of people who have deep down, if you unearth it, this feeling of accountability, dependency on this supreme being. You see it in Acts when the Apostle Paul goes to Athens in Acts 17. He notes that the people, though they've never heard about Jesus, are very religious. He points to their unknown God. He's not commending their idolatry, but rather he's noting their ignorance and calls them to repentance. But he starts where they're at. There is a deep longing in those people to worship something and somebody. And so when I look across, especially in the UK context, there is a quiet desperation in people. And God's predisposition is that he is not hiding, but he is wanting to reveal himself to those that choose to look. So that's my first reason for encouragement. My second would be there are actually some really positive trends that are happening in the UK right now. Firstly, in the academic world, there seems to be a resurgence in interest in God, which is hard to deny. If you're into your podcasts, you may listen to The Rest is History, which features Tom Holland. His story is fascinating. He's not a believer yet, but he wrote a book a while ago called The Shadow of the Sword, which was critiquing the Islamic worldview from a historical perspective. But a Muslim lady approached him after he had written it and said, the challenge was, you wouldn't put your own secular worldview under the same scrutiny that you put my worldview under. And Tom Holland's like, you're right, and I should. So he wrote a critique of his own cultural background called Dominion, The Making of the Western Mind, where in short, he actually undermines all his own belief systems and says all the stuff Western secular people believe and hold dear find their roots in the Jesus Revolution. Things like championing diversity and equality and compassion for the marginalized, freedom of expression, progress, kindness, they're all fruits which grow from the roots of Christianity. Then you've got someone like Jordan Peterson. Who knows where he's at with the Lord? Whatever your thoughts are, he is selling out arenas, teaching through books of the Bible. He's drawing thousands, particularly young men, to unapologetically speak to them about the Bible and books of the Bible and the God of the Bible. A.N. Hirsi Ali very famously has rejected her Islamic worldview. She grew up with Somalia and became a very prominent atheist and humanist, a critic of religion. She kept company with people like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris. And she was asked even, and then this is wonderful, she was asked once, even though you don't believe in God, if you did, what kind of God would you want to believe in? And so she wrote down the characteristics of the God she would choose to serve. And she couldn't dismiss the fact that that God looked exactly like Jesus Christ. In a recent article, she declared that she is now a Christian. And in response to the backlash she received from other humanist friends, she says this, got the quote. She says, I've turned to Christianity because I ultimately found life without any spiritual solace unendurable and self-destructive. Atheism failed to answer a simple question, what is the meaning and purpose of life? But that's the academic world. What about the average person on the street? What about the person you meet at the school gates or is in your sports team or in your workplace? Is there a similar thing that seems to be bubbling away under the surface? Well, recently, the Evangelical did a brilliant survey called the Talking Jesus Report. Just done a couple of years ago, surveyed about 4,000 people. They put a lot of money and energy into this report. And it has come up with some really interesting findings. Firstly, it discovered that 48% of the UK described themselves as Christian, and of that number, 6% would consider themselves practicing Christians, which is not an encouraging start. And I don't know what it is here, but I know in Leeds, I think the number of people that go to an evangelical church in Yorkshire is 1%, which would be sort of similar to a place like Japan. It's probably a little bit more here, but not much. So this report asked the general public about a few things. So first up, they asked about the resurrection. And so they asked this question, or these were the options. I believe the resurrection of Jesus from the dead happened word for word. I believe the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, but that story in the Bible contains some content which should not be taken literally. I don't believe it, or I don't know. This is fascinating. Next slide. 16% believe that Jesus rose from the dead, like word for word, as it says in the Bible. And just under 30% believe that it happened, though maybe some difference in the story of the Bible. That's 45% of people ticking a box saying they believe Jesus rose from the dead. Now, my guess is they're not really thinking through the consequences of that. But it's fascinating that that's people's attitude. What do they think about us? What do they think about the church? And so here's some of the criteria they were given. And you do wonder, are we going to be a little bit more blue or a little bit more orange? Well, positively, next slide, the top traits were caring, friendly, good-humoured, generous. And obviously there was some negativity there. But generally the outlook for someone in the UK is fairly positive towards us. Everyone encouraged today? But what about the church? How do they feel about the church as an institution? Well, sadly, next slide, the top two traits are pretty negative, hypocritical, and narrow-minded. But you've got to note there what it says at the top there. Third trait is positive. 22% of the church said the church was friendly. And for me, I think that's really important because it gives sort of validation and encouragement to the main form of evangelism that all of us are encouraged to do, which is friendship evangelism. The non-Christians are viewing you as a Christian in probably a much more positive light than we can sometimes think. We can often feel on the back foot. And so how are those actual conversations going? Well, next slide. Here's some of the results. of what they said, we see that 75% or three quarters of non-Christians felt comfortable during the faith conversation. And a third, because of the conversation, wanted to know more about Jesus. And bottom right, we see 36% were open to an encounter or experience of Jesus for themselves after the conversation. And again, about a third, so 41% felt closer to the person in question. I think that is absolutely fascinating. That generally speaking, a third of the people in our lives that aren't followers of Jesus are open to an experience of him, open to a conversation about him, and feel positive after we have had that conversation. That gives me like a little bit of hope. I'm not sure I'm feeling it quite in the room. But if you think of the population, what's the, in the Midlands, how many million people are there? There's a lot, isn't there? Very accurate answer. Let's say there's 10 million people in the Midlands. That means there's 3 million people out there waiting for someone to have a conversation about Jesus that would be super happy if someone had that conversation. I wonder if that's your perception of the non-Christians in your life. So where I'm moving to is this. They're the reasons to be confident. How do we do it? How do we step towards, particularly that third of people who are really open right now? Well, number one, are you in context with those who don't know Jesus? Now, it's interesting, that report asked how well do people know Christians, and you can just about see that. But percent of non-Christians who know a practicing Christian, there's a lot of room for improvement for the UK church. 53% of people know a Christian, but 42% don't know a practicing Christian. And they might have them in their lives, but they don't know that they are a person of faith. It's a sad stat that so many people don't know someone who is not just a Christian because they're born in this nation, but someone who actually loves Jesus and wants to share Jesus with them. So a really obvious question that we're asking all the time at Mosaic is, do you have like a third space, a place that isn't church? And for those of you that work in and around Christians, is there another place where you are actively making friends with those that don't know Jesus? It might be that the younger you are, the bigger your circle of friends. So in your 20s, you generally have sort of a bigger capacity for lots of friendship than when you're in your 50s. But are you actively thinking about having a part of your life that's with others that don't know Jesus? It might be a book club or cooking classes or a sports team or at the school gate in a parent and toddler group. It might be an allotment community. I mean, it doesn't really matter where. For me, I work full-time for the church, which is notorious. Like, you're not in the real world. You never see sort of normal people, just lots of other Christians. I go to the gym pretty regularly, and there's a whole over 50s community that I just about squeeze into we all hang out probably 4 or 5 times a week. We started to do some social stuff outside. I've just written a book, and so I went on a journey with some of my gym buddies who aren't Christians about the book, because they're also writing books as well. I've got 2 of my gym buddies halfway through my book at the moment, which is all about discipleship to Jesus and knowing him. They come in with lots of questions. What do you mean God speaks to you? Like, what do you mean you want to surrender your life to Jesus? Why would you do it? It's absolutely fascinating, those conversations. Pip is a midwife. We regularly meet up with her buddies in her team. We met with a young couple who are only sort of in their mid-20s. They hosted their first ever dinner party to have us old people round. We were out. Do you know what? This is a sad revelation of how early I go to bed. But we went out with some friends from Pip's work, and we didn't get back until 1 o'clock in the morning. And that threw me for probably a month or so. It was about 4 hours later than my normal bedtime. And in Mosaic in general, we're just so super encouraging of people just to find their, you know, find something you really enjoy doing it and make sure you do it non-Christians. We've got a lady in the church called Gillian who has recently been baptized. And it was wonderful because sometimes it just takes a little bit more to get people in our church family, like, out there. And so I gathered sort of a group, about 15 people, who wanted to grow in sort of evangelism mission. And one of our things that we all agreed to do was to invite one person in our lives to read the Bible with us. Which is like quite a big deal to sort of ask someone to read the Bible. And we had a week to do it. And my friend Beth, we were meeting up on the Tuesday. It was Monday night and she hadn't done her homework yet. So she popped round to her neighbour's house and she said, I've got homework from church and I need to find someone to read the Bible with. Would you be that person? And Gillian said yes. And so they began to read the Bible together and Gillian found Jesus, the Jesus of the Bible. It's absolutely amazing. And she's a lady, she is like really, she runs her family, got a huge family. She's in her 50s. And she has experienced such personal healing from encountering God. At baptism, she just said, I'm a new person. God has healed so much of my hurt in my lives. Her husband's there, who's not yet a believer, listening to her talk this way. We've got a wonderful lady called Debbie in the church who is a single mum, got a lovely four-year-old. She met one of our ladies at Mosaic at a Mums and Tots group. And Paula, my friend, just started sharing a bit about her own faith and again popped the question, Debbie, would you like to find out about who Jesus actually is? You know, you've heard about him from me. Why don't we read the Bible together? So they started reading the Bible and they drew in a couple of other friends also that wanted to read. And then they said, oh, you can actually watch the Alpha Course videos at home. So why don't we do that together as well? And Debbie was so keen that she went on the Alpha website, she binged watched all the Alpha videos and somehow managed to sign up to lead a course herself before she became a Christian. She was just so keen to learn and we baptized her about 2 months ago. She's come through to faith, just experiencing God, such hunger there. So that's the first thing to ask you. Have you got any non-Christian friends? And if not, like, what could you change in order to bring that about? Very simple things. I'm a reluctant dog owner. So Pip's the dog lover. I'm the dog owner. And so I just go on lots of walks. Every day I have to walk this dog. And if you've got a dog, you know that anyone will talk to your dog and you're expected to talk to other dogs. And every now and then you actually look up and talk to the owner. And you suddenly feel like you can get a conversation going. So where's your third space? Where are your non-Christian friends? Secondly, if you've got some non-Christian friends, who here would say, I have got more than two non-Christian? Let's lower the bar. I've got more than one non-Christian friend. Have a look. Oh, awesome. Awesome. How do you get that conversation going? That's more than just niceties. That's more than just the weather. Well, I've got the conversation quadrant that I'll put up on the screen. But this is how it works. You can have a casual conversation with someone, and at some point you have to take the next step into a meaningful conversation. So you move from the facts, you know, what the weather is like, that sort of thing, to a meaningful thing. How are you really doing? How am I really doing? There's some honesty. The difficult bit is moving from meaningful to spiritual, yeah? That's the hard bit. Anyone? Am I the only one? Yeah, that's the hard bit. So I learned this about 6 months ago, but there is a question that you can ask that was sold to me as the question that will always get a spiritual answer. And I want to share that question with you now. The question is this. Have you ever had any faith of any kind? It cannot be broader than that. So you're basically saying to someone, have you had any faith at any time? And it will immediately start to open up a spiritual conversation, because the answer is either no, and so you're like, oh, that's interesting, so what do you make of it? Or it's yes, oh, tell me more about it. And so I think the key in evangelism with these non-Christian friendships is, one is to have them, but to be super intentional. Not in a forced way, not in a sort of a way that is totally unnatural, to move from meaningful to spiritual. And then if there is openness in the spiritual conversation, that quadrant goes to discovery, which is about them discovering Jesus for themselves. It might be that you need to read the Bible with them, might be that you invite them to church, might be that you do the Alpha course with them, or whatever it is they need to discover Jesus for themselves. The issue will be, in all of that, to deal with the fear. So I've got a little group at the moment. There's about 10 of us all trying to grow in this. One of the things we've agreed together is to do a prayer walk every week, just half an hour, where we go out and we try and be really open to anyone we meet on that prayer walk. And I was doing my prayer walk, and I met about three neighbours on my way round. And the first one, I was like, I really must pray for this person, because that was the goal, really, to actually stop and say, can I pray for you, because I'm praying for the neighborhood. Failed on the first one, failed on the second one, came to my last neighbor as I was sort of coming in back home, failed on the third one. And I sort of came back, and I'm like, I'm leading this group, and I'm still scared of doing this stuff. So went back out later in the day, because I really felt that third person, I was meant to be praying for them, and gloriously met that man again. And Big Tony, who is like the mafia boss of my little neighborhood, he was the guy. And it turns out that, you know, just some family stuff going on that is really breaking him. And it was a beautiful moment for me to say, I would love to pray for your daughter. So I would so encourage you, if you're going to move as churches towards becoming more evangelistic, you've got to have some spiritual conversations. The worst they can say is no. And then lastly, and to close, I would encourage you to know your story. Can you talk about your relationship with Jesus in 10 seconds? Because that's often the amount of time you've got. When someone says, oh, are you a Christian? Or, oh, why do you go to church? Or, what were you doing Sunday? You know, and you don't really want the answer to be, I went to church. You want to say, Jesus has totally transformed my life. And so I meet up with other people he's done that for on a Sunday. Or something like that. The key, and this is what we're trying to do at Mosaic, is that we're trying to aim our explanation of our story towards the person that we are chatting to. So, for example, you would say, I've always thought this, but then I came to realize that Jesus is this. And whatever you say for the this is aimed at the person. So if you're speaking to someone who you know is perhaps had relationship difficulties, you might want to say something like, I always thought Christianity was about formalism, just going to church, obeying the rules. But I discovered that it was about a deep personal relationship with the Heavenly Father and deep connection with other people. And you've hit on that relational need in the person that probably right now needs someone to answer some of their relational needs. So it's not rocket science, but just aim your testimony in a way that will appeal to the felt needs of the people that you're talking to. I don't think that's manipulative. I think that's just wisdom in talking about Jesus in a way that is super relevant to the people that you love. So just a reminder, climbing the mountain of evangelism can feel like climbing up a wall of glass, but more people than we think are open and interested. God is going before us. He is not hiding. And what is remarkable in this is that he loves to use people like you and me. If we deal with our fears, we know that the good news is deeply attractive, but we often fear what people will think. And so I'm calling you, encouraging you to be someone who is able to talk proudly and confident about Jesus. That is the foolishness of the gospel. That 1 Corinthians says that it's foolishness and scandalous to the Jewish people who look for power. And to Greeks, it was foolish because they were looking for wisdom. The gospel makes no sense, but in it, there is power because it leads people to Jesus.